Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook. And I suggest that because we're going to be showing you several video clips today that I think you'll find of interest. We're going to talk about apples and green tea and how those ingredients, according to Edith Cowan University in Australia, allow us to live a longer life. Also today, we'll be taking on the issue that we started yesterday, a special insight from Chris Hedges from Tutig, and I've added my own commentary into that, and on what's wrong with our current system. It's not working for us. It's certainly working for the people in control, and we just don't happen to be in control of anything today. Then a special commentary that's very important because we have people listening from all over the world on how we can create a two-tiered system. For those who want and demand their own private insurance, you can have that. But for everyone else, we can have universal health care. They're saying you can't do that because it will cost about $20 to $30 trillion over the next 10 years. I'm saying you're absolutely wrong. You haven't done the scholarship. You don't have a background in economics. And you don't know about the healthcare system. You're just engaged in a non-plausible platitude of political convenience. Now let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Today I'm going to show you in detail, very detailed, exact information of how we can have universal healthcare and save $20 to $30 trillion. You heard me right. That's going to happen today. Also yesterday I did a little commentary about what it means to be in front of a choice and decide, is this a good choice, appropriate choice, inappropriate choice? What is the likely outcome? And I want to share this four-minute clip where I'm in front of McDonald's with you today because once on a buddy's 60th birthday, he was visiting me in Florida at the animal sanctuary, and we were out on the track running. And I said, this is a phenomenal day for you, Tom. And he said, why? I said, well, not only just 60, but if you want to become the healthiest 60-year-old on the planet, I can help you do that. And this was my buddy from the age of very young in life. We grew up together. And he was very tall. He was about 6'4 and a half. He was an all-state athlete, great football player and basketball player, and an easygoing guy. Very, very nice guy to be around, great sense of humor. But he didn't live a healthy life. And so he turns to me and says, Gary, he said, I'm happy with my life. I'm content. I'm not going to give up my smoking. He smoked 3-pack cigarettes a day. I'm not going to give up every morning going down to the Waffle House and having my breakfast. I want that. I like it. He said, now, you can take all those juices and eat all those vegan foods, and you can come out here and work out. That's your choice. It's not mine. And in that moment, I simply said, you are right. I have no right to expect something of you that you don't expect of yourself. But if you should change your mind, then I'll be happy to help you. And then I mentioned this. Would you think about this, Tom? And I'm asking everyone in the audience to think about this at the same time. The traditional way that we learn in our society and many other societies of the world is that we do not pay attention to the day-to-day consequences of the choices we make. We wait till we get to an endpoint, to a destination. Then we will stop for a moment if there is a crisis, if something has changed, if we've lost control of something, a relationship is ending, a life is challenged, a job is insecure, we are in debt. When something finally grabs our attention greater than our capacity for distracting our attention, and we ask, If I could do it all over again, would I have made different choices? And do I have to get to a destination? Do I have to get to a crisis before I pay attention to the consequences of the choice I made? Otherwise, you'll never have a value added to your choices because you'll be indifferent to the choice's consequence till there is a consequence. And then you say, wow. I'll give you a good example of this. There was a wonderful person. You heard her on the air here a lot. She had her own show on Progressive Radio Network, Virginia Reed. And Virginia wanted to do something exceptional with her life. That's all she said. So I said, let's do something. And I was doing the San Francisco Marathon, the first San Francisco Marathon. And she came out there, and about halfway through the marathon, she didn't want to do it anymore. She hadn't trained. She'd only done 6 miles of training. It's 26 miles. And so she got angry. And she was angry, and she was actually trying to slug me about every other block for about 10 miles. And then I said, what do you see in front of you? She said, why? I said, because in front of you are the lead women. Now, you can continue being angry at how you feel because you weren't prepared for the challenge that you decided to take on, or you can realize that you have a chance to have a breakthrough in your life, like unlike any breakthrough in your life. And suddenly her whole temperament, attitude changed. She said, yeah. And so, and I'm pacing her. I'm not running my race. I'm running her race to help her and to keep her motivated. And on the 25th mile, she caught them and passed them. And she won. She won a gold medal. Well, I'm going to tell you, everyone in her life knew what she had done. She was very pleased with her accomplishment, and rightly so. I mean, to win a gold medal in your first race in life, and the first race with no training whatsoever, was a marathon. And then I said, understand you could do this with anything else in your life, but you have to focus on it. You have to be disciplined. You have to gain the strength. Now, because she danced nonstop and she didn't smoke and she didn't drink, she was relatively healthy, but she had a very bad diet. And I once sat with her and I said, you're doing so much good for your life. Why not now pay attention to your health? And her answer was, I'm thin. I can dance all night. And she could. I said, you may be thin, but your arteries are probably clogged and damage the epithelium. You don't know the state of your health. When was the last time you had your blood pressure taken? She said, why should I take my blood pressure? I'm healthy. I said, it's called the silent killer for a reason. It can cause strokes. And I said, so why not just take just a month? That's all. I'll put you on a protocol and let's really help you. And she said, no, I it's not needed. And a year later, she had a stroke. And when I went to the hospital, when I heard and went into the ICU, she looked up at me and she said, I should have listened. She said, all I'm thinking about now is how stupid was I? Okay, it's not to beat up on yourself. Did she change after that? No, she later died eating in a deli and having some unhealthy food. So even when we're at a crisis, it doesn't mean we're going to change. So why not do something a little different with our mindset? Here's what I'm suggesting. Why not ask ourselves, what do we want? What do we need during each stage of our life? And what goal are we trying to achieve? Then ask, what tools do I need to reach that goal? Do I need a support system? Do I have the right support system? Am I the right person to be directing my own life, or am I still living through other people's expectations of me? Am I not making choices because those choices might run afoul of someone else's thoughts about me? And that's so common. I don't think we appreciate how common it is to suddenly stand out in some way that is considered unacceptable or odd or weird. Even becoming a vegan, a lot of people think that's just too weird. So once you realize what you need in your life in order to achieve the happiness, joy, health, and balance each day of your life, then that's what your energy is. That's the choices you make. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I want to be healthy and live a long life, and then make all unhealthy choices. And yet that's exactly what we do. I don't want to be bankrupt. I don't want to be homeless on the street. I don't want to have whatever I have taken away from me because I couldn't pay for it. Okay. Then stop buying stuff. This putting yourself at risk of losing it because you can't pay for it. And then we have that compulsion. I need, I need. No, you want, you want. You don't need these things. So we clutter our lives and waste our time in minutia and trivia. That's why this piece I'm going to show you in a little bit on Monsanto about the people, and some of those people, it turns out, after the filming, they actually listen to this radio program. Then what exactly are you listening to on this radio program? Because the people listening to this radio program are not going to be going into McDonald's to get their substance. Anyhow, we're going to do that. And also, if time permits, I'm going to play some of a testimony before Congress of an Evergreen State College professor, a very liberal professor, a very humanistic professor. I've watched some of his lectures, and they're very good. Brett Weinstein, about how he ended up having to leave his job, a tenure job, because the students said that he created an environment in his classroom that did not make them feel comfortable. And yet the people, it turned out, who were complaining had never attended his class. And so when his own students, who had attended his class for years, went to his defense, they were also shouted down. And the people were saying, we want to have a all kinds of trip words, so that you must tell us what you're going to tell us before you tell us, so in case you say anything that we find offensive, we can then go to a safe place and hug a pillow. And these were the people screaming, violent. I mean, my God. And you're thinking, hold on a second, Jack. You're the person saying that you're afraid of something being said in class, and you're out here screaming and cursing and angry and violent? This is the game that's being played. And I'm sick of it. I think we should all be sick of it. And we should say no more. You clowns have had enough time to alter people's perceptions of what a university experience should be. And no longer are we paying attention to you. And we should say that about CNN and MSNBC and Rachel Maddow and all these other clowns. They have had their moment to show us their bias, their incompleteness, their lack of understanding, their lack, complete superficiality of an intellect. And yet they've had control of the entirety of the public conversation, along with those dancing clowns at the New York Times who pretend to be journalists. So we're going to take all that on. We start with apples, however. And an apple a day does a lot for you. Well, why? Because it's rich in flavonoids. Apples, grapes, and tea, they fight against cancer. They fight against heart disease, particularly for smokers and heavy drinkers. And according to new research from Edith Cowan, that's Cowan University, and their School of Medicine and Health Sciences, they looked at the Danish diet and of 53,000 Danes over 23 years, and they found that people who consumed good foods, rich in flavonoids, there's your fruits and vegetables, a primary plant-based foods, were less likely to die from cancer and heart disease. It's that simple. Very simple. Remember, never confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. Walnuts protect us against ulcerative colitis in this study from the University of Connecticut, just out today. Walnut consumption, a handful of walnuts, can offer protection against ulcerative colitis. And through a complex array of natural compounds called phytochemicals, walnuts have been shown to provide a multitude of health benefits, including protection against inflammation and colon cancer. And that was published in the Journal of Nutrients. So eat the walnuts and have less problems of heart disease, clogging the arteries, etc. And we have millions of Americans suffering from Crohn's disease, etc. Also, a new study links a high-fat diet and gut bacteria and insulin resistance. It's University of Health Network in Canada. I'll just put it into lay language, and that means that when you're eating healthy foods, and we all know what those are now, our gut immune system increases, and that can help prevent many of the complications of diabetes. That's what it's saying. Mind you, our gut bacteria are part of the healthy immune system in the body. The more healthy foods you eat, the more healthy juices you drink, the healthier your bacteria and the biome. This was done at the Department of Pathology, University of New Health. Next up, zinc increases bone mineral density and prevents bone loss and diabetes. And this is from Shanxing University in China. So it's just this simple. If you want to have less osteoporosis or thinning of the bones, and if you're diabetic, then take zinc. Zinc is very beneficial for your immune system, but it's also beneficial in helping with remineralization of your bones. And that's good. It protects you. Next up, a study finds older adults are less distracted by negative information. University of Southern California. So a new study shows that compared to younger adults, older adults are less distracted by things that other people might get upset about. Even in the earliest stages of attention, they looked at the emotion-induced blindness, that's what it's called, which refers to distractions caused by emotionally arousing stimuli. And in lay language, it means a lot of people, especially younger people, they get upset over everything. Everything becomes an issue. They catapult from one crisis to another trauma. Crisis, trauma. The older you get, you start realizing, hey, life is worth more than getting upset. Let's find some quality time in each day for ourselves. Also from University of Eastern Finland, fermented dairy products, we're not talking about GMO dairy products, we're talking about healthy organically fed cows roaming in pasture. They can have a fermented dairy product like kefir or buttermilk, for example, that's extremely helpful for preventing heart disease. That's right. The fermented dairy products, yogurt, quark, that's Q-A-R-K, kefir, K-E-F-I-R, and sour milk, can lower the risk of incident coronary heart disease, and that's important. So, again, when you're going to have dairy, if you're not allergic, have organic dairy. And finally, the effects of vitamin D on the size of uterine fibroids in women with vitamin D deficiency from Isfahan University Medical School. And they're just showing that if you have uterine fibroids, which are the most common benign pelvic tumors in women of reproductive age, that has a very high incidence, it can go up to 77% of women, there's a high prevalence of vitamin D deficiency. So make sure you're getting your 1,000 to 5,000 units of vitamin D each day, or make sure you're getting about one-third of your body exposed to good sunlight, at least, let's say, for 45 minutes to an hour a day. Oh, one other thing. University of Sussex and Yale University, two university studies, 30 minutes of reading a day could add years to your life. Now, past studies have shown that reading books can benefit people in a multitude of ways, physically, mentally, and intellectually. Now, in a new study, people who read a book for about 30 minutes a day were found to live approximately 2 years longer than those who didn't read at all. And that's good. That means some of you, some of the people in this audience, you're good readers. You read a lot. So you might be able to add 5 years onto your life just from the fact that you're doing a lot of reading. And it doesn't have to be a book. You could read articles as well. And we have, and I just got the count this morning, we have 37 articles on vaccines. No, excuse me, 52 articles on vaccines, 37 articles on what's wrong with Wikipedia and the internet. And we have 12 articles on the environment. These are all new. These are all within the last year or so. So read them, download them, and share them. In fact, this morning I got an email from a woman named Pietra from this audience who lives up state, and she said, could you send me 6 articles that I could give the state legislators tomorrow that would help explain the contradictions and myths and lies that are being told to legislators who are passing these draconian acts, because we're up there, a whole group tomorrow, to try to bring to the legislators' attention that we want freedom of choice, and that the vaccines are not safe, and the mandatory ones like Gardasil are extremely dangerous, and MMR is extremely dangerous. She said, we need the data. I said, fine. So we sent her six articles that you could present in any court of law. They've all been medically vetted, and they've been legally vetted. So they're good for testimony. So she's going to make copies. She said she's making 300 copies to give to the people who are going to be there. That's a good way to use information. Let that information empower your social activism. By the way, University of South Carolina and University of Queensland found that anti-inflammatory diet, what I talk about all the time, every day, lowers the risk of depression in women by 26%. How about that? That's a big reduction. Now, that's the latest in health and nutrition. Broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'm Gary Noll. Watch the program on Progressive Radio Network Facebook. And we're going to take a short break and come back. And I'm going to share an important commentary versus fear. And we're going to be sharing some of the best insights from Chris Hedges, one of our greatest thinkers on the planet. I have my own commentary I'm going to be sharing. And then a separate commentary I'm going to be sharing with you as well. Got a lot to share. Stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Before we go to my commentary and we go to a video clip, just a few thoughts. First, we have so many articles that are there as social issue tools. They're meant to help you. Not everyone has the knowledge or skill to do original investigative reporting or are good writing. We've done all that to help people. So read them, share them. Same with the videos. I'm going to do a commentary tomorrow about Dr. Kerry Mullis, the Nobel Prize winner, who I filmed, and he just passed. And it was one of the most interesting interviews of my career. We're going to share that video with you tomorrow and some insights that you would not otherwise know because I was there with him out on the beach when we were filming this. And what went on behind the scenes. Also, tomorrow, Leonard Lopate, who does a program on our sister station, WBI, and was on WMYC, I believe, for over 30 years, will be live on the air at 12:30. I'm going to be asking him to discuss once and for all, because everyone in the media has tried to reach him, and he's refused to discuss the truth about him leaving. Some said he was fired, and because of things he had said or done that made it an unwelcome environment. So in any case, he's going to be here to discuss that. Why is that important? Because our sister station, WBI, is really struggling. Everyone's doing as much as they can in a good way to help the station survive. But imagine now that you've ordered a premium and the premium doesn't arrive or it's late. That's because the station didn't spend the money on the premiums. It was spending on other expenses. But there's one person that's not raising money, and that's Amy Goodman on Good Democracy Now. So I ask a simple question. If you're boycotting in any way, not raising money because you don't like Leonard Lopate on, or you feel that somehow his background or reputation has been adverse to the station, then why not talk with him? You know, because that money coming in could help pay for premiums, pay for people's salary, pay to keep it on the air. But at least don't be a hypocrite. If you're going to boycott the station because you don't like someone like Leonard Lopate, but you stay on the station with your radio show, isn't that kind of a double standard? If you're going to boycott, go off the air completely. And, you know, that process will be honored. But staying on the air where you benefit from the listeners and then not helping the station, that to me is something that must be addressed and will be tomorrow. I'm going to play a 4-minute clip about my challenging people at McDonald's. And by the way, I have another clip I'll play about people being interviewed in on 125th Street. Both of these are on 125th Street in Manhattan, about a juice bar, organic juice bar. And interesting, both groups of people understood cause and effect. Just one wanted to manifest it, and the other knew it and didn't actualize it. Let's see this clip now.
I'm talking with individuals in the African-American and Latino community. I'm at the heart of fast food country here. I'm at 125th Street, Broadway in Harlem. I want to talk with people who are eating here on a regular basis and ask them, why are they eating here? Is it the taste of the food? Do they understand the health consequences of eating a diet high in saturated fats, simple sugars, French fries, hamburgers, hot dogs? And is this something to do occasionally or is this regularly? And what message as an adult does this give to their children, especially with the high incidence of disease in the African American Latino community and children? Let's talk with them now. Hi, Denise. How are you? Denise, what's in the bag?
McDonald's.
McDonald's, open the bag, Denise. show and tell.
McDonald's, a pancake.
Oh, pancake. Who's that for?
Myself.
Now, why do you want that pancake?
Because it's good. McDonald's is good.
Now, you're looking at it. You're telling us the truth here.
Yeah, it's good.
Now, what all are you eating? What's in there?
McDonald's, hash brown, cookies.
Cookies are good
sausage,
for you?
Sausage, eggs.
Sausage is good for you?
That's my snack. The cookies.
Tell me what ideally, if you were really eating because you wanted to be ideally healthy, what would be the foods that you would eat?
I would eat royal food like fish, a lot of vegetables, maybe some brown rice, a lot of orange juice, apple juice, some things like that.
So you know good food?
Yes.
But you're not always eating good food?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know. I just don't eat good food all the time.
One of the things I know for sure as a nutritionist is that a lot of us feel that comfort foods are going to solve some of the problems we have. A lot of African Americans are really having a hard time just being able to manage from day to day, whether it's financial or stress from school or whatever. And the comfort foods seem to give that few minutes of pleasure. And I think what we need to analyze is a moment of pleasure, what happens to the health? It's only a few minutes. The most you could do in enjoying a meal would be an hour. And after that hour, you're going to pay for that for the next 10 years if you do that every day. Heart disease, cancer, all of the things that are really affecting us and that are killing African Americans every day are really behavioral problems. They're not problems of heredity. What's hereditary is really the food.
Do you believe that one of the reasons Americans are overweight is because they're eating too much of the fast foods?
Yeah, definitely. We eat too much of the fast foods and we're currently always on the run. So we tend to eat on the run. Now, I like to carry right now. I don't have it because I ate it, but I had an orange, an apple, and a banana.
Adele, what did you just eat?
Eggs and muffin and sausage.
Oh, now, Adele, you ate the sausage? Adele.
Yes, I did. I did.
Was that good for you?
No.
No. You were bad.
Yes. Yes, I was.
Jog around the block, Adele.
Yes. No, I'm overweight, but I'm trying to go.
Now, what are you doing to try to lose weight?
I do exercise in the morning.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What kind of exercise do you do?
Sit-ups sometime when I can. Just, you know, I'm a little bit overweight, but I walk a lot. Every day, you know, back and forth, I work a lot.
Okay, we'll show you the other part of the people who are eating the healthy food. Again, people know what's good for them, and we have to respect our body if we respect our own life and at a level that is not just superficial and is a distraction. Now, I'm concerned about what is happening now with the New Green Movement. It's not going to go anywhere the way it is. It has to be reformulated. I'm asking for people in this audience, to share what I'm about to share with you with people in Washington, D.C. If anyone here was a part of the movement with Cortez or the others, share these insights because these are the specific insights that can help them. But first, just a general overview. The genuine populism and New Deal socialism are the only hope of thwarting the rise of neo-fascist movements. Now, do we have a neo-fascist movement? Just look at Silicon Valley. Look at Google. Look at Wikipedia, if you want a neo-fascist platform, where they will take individuals, they will pillar those individuals, condemn them, never talk with them, give them no opportunity for any due process, no opportunity to correct any errors, though they say they do, but they're lying, they don't. And then they put them into a permanent gulag on the internet. I'm talking about Deepak Chopra. I'm talking about Cheryl Atkinson and some of the great minds in science. And they're helpless, all because of the construct. The neo-fascists have constructed these platforms like nothing that's anti-vaccine. The question's vaccined, even by people who've been victimized by vaccines and proven. They have no form. Google censors it all. If you are against GMOs, you're censored. Now, if you are a liberal and distinguished a liberal, historical liberal and historical conservative, both of you both have very good views about life, but it's when these views are then captured by the corporate Democrats and the corporate Republicans who are neo-fascists, then they suddenly, all the good people with the good brains and minds and ethics, they're set aside. This, however, will never be permitted by the Democratic Party hierarchy. Why? Because, according to Chris Hedges, look at Pelosi and Joe Biden and Senate Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who are, quote, acutely aware they would instantly lose their power without the prop up of hundreds of millions of corporate dollars. They and their corporate sponsors will block all reform, even if it means another 4 years of Trump and extinguishing of democracy. The only thing they have to sell us is fear. Fear of Trump and fear of Russians. And while Trump sells the fear of immigrants and Muslims and people of color and those he brands as socialist, this is a toxic diet. The greatest traitors in America are not Trump and his neo-fascist minions shouting, lock her up or send her home, but a decadent, morally bankrupt, self-identified liberal elite consumed by greed. They orchestrated the social inequality that permits Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett to control more wealth than the bottom 50% of the entire American population. They pay lip service to the climate crisis, but have not done anything to halt the sixth great mass extinction. The fossil fuel industry, under the Democrats and Republicans, continues to pump carbon emissions into the atmosphere. The polar ice caps disappear. The sea levels rise. The deforestation expands. The clogging of the oceans with floating islands of plastic that poison our food chain is unchecked. No one among the ruling elites has any intention of restraining a bloated, out-of-control military that consumes half of all discretionary spending while half the country lives in poverty or near poverty. The federal deficit looks set to exceed $1 trillion by the end of this fiscal year, and the nation's infrastructure disintegrates. All meaningful resistance takes place outside the formal political structure. And if you doubt me, ask yourself this issue. The 10-day protest in April in London, led by Extinction Rebellion, which saw 1,130 people arrested as crowds repeatedly shut down major parts of the city and demonstrating against the failure of the ruling elites to confront the climate catastrophe, is what we must understand. Extinction Rebellion has called for a strike by workers around the world in this coming October, a strike in which thousands of arrests are anticipated. We have exceeded the 350 parts per million of atmospheric CO2 that climate scientists said was the level at which we still might have thwarted societal collapse. However, just this past July was the hottest month in recorded history. We are currently at 415 parts a million of CO2 with enough heat in the system to ensure 450 parts per million within the next several years. A temperature rise of 2 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial age measurement guarantees catastrophic climate disruption. Now, I'm in the process of finishing a major documentary that will highlight all of this, and it's not just about global warming. Every single thing wrong with our environment, from acidification of our oceans to the great garbage patches of plastic in the Pacific to the dead zones all over the world to no sewage being processed at all and much of India just going directly into the water, the same water people then drink, wash in and bathe in, make their holy ritual their sacraments each day in. That is so toxic that if the average American who doesn't have the bacteria accommodating that kind of toxicity would die within a day of going in there. And yet nothing is being done. The sixth largest city in India has no more water. Cape Town, South Africa, 4 million people, no water. But are we doing anything about it? Not at all. Are we stopping the military industrial complex from being the largest polluter? Not at all. We actually increased by 3.2% carbon dioxide emissions in the United States in the last 12 months. And we're not the leading ones. China's the leading one. They want a breakneck speed of development of their Silk Road, both on water and on land. They're achieving that. They're building the largest city in the world with 140 million capacity, bringing three provinces together with high-speed rails. They're going to do that. But at enormous cost, that project alone in China is enough to take us over 2 degrees Celsius. And there, it's game over. So we're looking at the collapse of the world's agricultural systems, according to Roger Howland, the co-founder of Extinction Rebellion. We have the people from Extinction Rebellion filmed. But when I went out to the same day that there was 1,200,000 demonstrating in Europe against global warming, and there was supposed to be a group in America demonstrating, and at the United Nations there was one woman with two of her friends. That's it. That's it in all of America. Wow. Because we're distracted by things we consider more important. Remember, long before the sea levels rise, we're going to have a world economic collapse because we're not going to be able to feed ourselves. That's what's bad about all this. That's why people are in a panic. In the UN, in academia, in the elites, they're looking at this, they're pulling their hair out. We have this repressed media space, so it's not obvious to everyone because the media is not showing us the severity and honesty of how bad it is, but it is that bad. So we need a social transformation. We need to have everyone, every corporation in America taxed equally so they can't use expensive lawyers to not pay taxes. And that's what's happening now. We need to organize communities around quality of life issues so that people can learn to adapt to these changes instead of maladapting to the traumatic changes that are occurring otherwise. This is a matter of physics. It's not a matter of political opinion. These changes are coming. It doesn't matter what your body politic is. It doesn't matter the Democrats are in denial, the Republicans are in denial. The people in the White House are too dumb to be in denial. They don't know how to spell denial. The media is in denial. So exactly who's supposed to save us and what are we supposed to do when everyone everywhere in our society, the professional class, all 17 million of them, they're too busy making a living and spending the money showing that somehow their insecurity is being tempered by their ability to buy things that they couldn't have done earlier, but they have to spend all their waking hours making money so they can buy stuff they don't need until the one day they're broke. And all the while, we have over $200 trillion in total debt in the United States. And we're supposed to think that somehow we have a good economy? No, we do not. We are bankrupt. $12 trillion in homeowner debt. And all that's going to happen for that market to collapse completely is for the dollar to no longer have the power as the primary reserve currency. And that's happening now with yuan, backed by gold, and other mixed currencies. Also, we have nothing to back up what we owe. We can just keep printing money. Well, look at other countries that just print money. Today, look at Chile. So you have to understand, until we bring back industry and help people redevelop those industries and businesses in local communities to de-ghettoize, to stop Like right now, when I was last in Detroit on PBS, they put us, anybody who goes there, they put you in a hotel overnight, and it's a beautiful area. It's right on the river, right across from Canada, and you can see a major city in Canada. And I walked around the streets, and this had been a warehouse area, but it had been gentrified. Nice restaurants and clothing stores and boutiques and art supply, and everything you'd want in a local nice neighborhood. Well, why didn't they continue that and do it for the rest of the area? But they didn't, because that's not where the money was. They're going to build where there's money. Same way in Manhattan. You got five classes of people. The super rich, the ones who can afford $5 to $12 million down at the yards, the Hudson Yards, to live in a place that I think is architecturally ugly. Then you have your rich who live on Park Avenue and other places and Fifth Avenue, corporate leaders and media moguls and major personalities. And their whole life is consumed by what's next? Where's the next photo op? How can I make myself more important or seemingly more important? Then you have your professional class that envies many of the people and what they have, the cars, the Lamborghinis, the mansions, the four homes all over the place. And so they're working as hard as they can to have something similar to that. And then you have your working class who can't afford to live in Manhattan. 51% of all the people living in Manhattan live below or at the poverty level. And then you have your poorest class. And those are the people that are just struggling and don't know where the next meal is or could end up in the street. And we're not doing anything to change any of this except to accommodate the needs of the most powerful. So we're looking at what amounts to different forms of extinction, from animals to insects, and then quality of life and sustainability all over the world. It's just if it hasn't come to you yet, then you're lucky. But it's going to come to everyone sooner rather than later. I predict in the next 5 years our entire society will collapse because of economics. Set aside the environment. That's a separate issue. So I'm calling upon the progressives. I'm calling upon the independents. I'm calling the people who saw the corruption in the Democrats and the Clintons and the Bushes and the Republican parties to pull out of all that support. In an ideal world, you would see Bernie Sanders running for president and have Tulsi or one of the at least ones who have some ideals. She would be ideal as a vice president. And that's exactly what the corporate Democrats and the Clinton Democrats are trying hope for, but they're attacking Bernie Sanders. Every single article about Bernie Sanders is demonizing now by the Democrats. That's how corrupt they are. What they're not aware of, they're not very bright people, is that you have 104 million people who know the truth about what they want and won't vote and haven't voted for the corporate Democrats or corporate Republicans, but they will vote for someone who has ethics. And that's what they're not counting on. All those young idealists, all the millennials, they'll come in on that, especially if Representative Cortez and other young idealistics come forward and say, yes, we want Bernie, and pull away from the corporate. There has to be a division within the Democratic Party for Bernie to win, and he would beat Trump hands down. So that's the irony of it. Also, for the New Green Deal, or the Green New Deal, it was articulated 12 years ago by the Green Party. Why didn't they get any credit for it? That's the politics of Washington, which called for massive job and public works programs to transition our energy infrastructure to renewable energy. The deal was promoted by Howie Hawkins when he ran for the governorship of New York in 2014 and by Jill Stein during her 2016 presidential run. The proposal for a Green New Deal by the Green Party has a fundamental difference from what is touted by progressive Democrats, but they're not really progressive. They're more corporate Democrats. It does not argue that the structural change and a transition to renewable energy will come by making alliances with corporate power. That's what so many of the Greens do today. They align like Al Gore. With his $7 billion hedge fund, he believes in, you know, global warming, but he wants the solution to be what he can profit from. And that's where you see these alliances. Instead, it insists that we bring about a transformational change in our economy by crushing corporate power and establishing a different system. Well, that's not going to work unless you strip out each one of them separately. Take away this. You know, it's a whole conglomerate of things all put together. Let me give you an idea of how this would work. And I'm looking at the time. I may have time to do this, where I'm going to start with one section of this, and that's Medicare for All. We're told that Medicare for All could not possibly work. It would cost $20 to $30 trillion. There are different amounts, and none of them are accurate. But here's the issue. If we want to have universal health care for those who want it, and private insurance for those who want private insurance, you could have both systems. You pay for your private insurance. That's your business. You have a right to spend your money where you want. But let me show you the numbers. And these are accurate numbers. In one recent year, $19.5 billion out of $3.5 trillion spent was spent on measurable medical errors. Additionally, $1.4 billion were attributed to increased death rates, with $1.1 billion or 10 million days of lost productivity from missed work based upon short-term disability claims. Now, the study that I'm citing says that we're lost as much as $1 trillion a year when quality-adjusted life issues and years are applied to those that die. When indirect costs are accounted for, the estimated economic impact skyrockets to over $1 trillion a year. That's the Institute of Healthcare Improvement. What they call preventable harm or adverse events in medicine takes 1,000 people per 24 hours in the United States. Nobody talks about that. They didn't talk about it with Obamacare. They don't talk about it with the system we have now. Each year in the United States, there are approximately 2 million adverse drug reactions that cause a staggering 100,000 deaths and increases health care costs by $136 billion. There's another $136 billion. Medicaid fraud alone is up to $272 billion a year, according to The Economist. And 25% of all hospital spending goes to administrative costs. That's according to CNBC. $275 billion wasted in insurance paperwork. That's just the paperwork. That's not all insurance. The billing services cost $471 billion out of this. For example, $70 billion to physicians, $74 billion to hospitals, $94 billion to services provided, $198 billion in private insurance, $35 billion in public insurance. We're wasting our medical insurance waste, this just proven waste, $275 billion a year. Medical liability insurance, $55 billion a year. Insurance billing, $471 billion. So take these into account. Medical fraud, $140 billion. Unnecessary administrative fees, $190 billion. Inefficient delivery of services, $130 billion. Missed preventative opportunities, $55 billion. Unnecessary price hikes, $105 billion, where they're exploiting the cost. And then you start to see, wow. And then you look at 4.3 billion prescriptions and $375 billion spent on those prescriptions. Now, we took a look at what Life Extension and Bill Floon had put together, a chart of the top 10 drugs sold in the United States, and we found that those drugs' actual cost to make, what the manufacturer would pay for a 30-day supply of each of these top 10 drugs was anywhere from 5 cents to 30 cents. And some of these had 10,000, 100,000% markup for that being billed to the hospital, Medicare, Medicaid. So you could take that $375 billion, you could bring that down to $100 billion, which would still give them a profit, but not an obscene profit. All right? You could get rid of unnecessary medical testing. Healthcare economists reported $700 billion in unnecessary medical tests. Why do you get those tests? Because we're a highly litigious society. We have an army of lawyers who would love to sue anybody and everybody they could. And they get the money, you get bupkis. But doctors are doing all the tests they can. In case they get sued, they can say, well, we did all the tests. But you didn't need those tests. And many of those tests are dangerous and they're unnecessary. So take $700 billion out if you had no-fault insurance. So if you can't sue a doctor, you can't sue a hospital, all you can do is bring a claim, and if it's found that you have been injured, then the system itself would reimburse you to the degree that you had lost your wages for whatever time it took you to recover. That would take that burden off doctors, and then they wouldn't have to do unnecessary tests. They wouldn't be over-prescribing, over-treating. So that's important. And also look at all the corporate lobbying. We have the figures. Big Pharma spent $4 billion and insurance spent $2.7 billion on lobbying just last year. That's $6.7 billion on giving money away so they could get influence. Pfizer, $2 million. Amgen, $1.6 million. Eli Lilly, $1.1 million. Merck, $1 million. J&J, Abbott, Bristol Myers Squibb, Novartis. Big Pharma gave $2 million in campaign contributions and direct lobbying to California legislators behind the vaccine mandates. So if you want to know, and by the way, Richard Penn, who sponsored it, received the most of any of the legislators. So they buy your legislation, they buy the legislators, they write the legislation, they pass it because it's a permanent income stream for the doctors, the hospitals, and the vaccine companies. You shouldn't allow any of that. GlaxoSmithKline. They all gave money for lobbying, and they got about 1,000 to 1 return. For every dollar they gave in lobbying, they get $1,000 in how it benefits them in return. So if you want to know why we have a piece of legislation that protects the pharmaceutical industry but not the patient, it's because of all the money that was spent. We're writing an article. It'll be done tomorrow. It'll be posted. And it shows you the 1986 Act, which identified, made harmless all of the vaccine makers from any damage that came from their vaccines that had nothing to do with public health, safety, or vaccines. It had to do with money given to the legislators because we track where all the legislators who co-sponsored that legislation went to work and how much money they made. It's all about greed and money. We also showed that you can sit on a committee, a commerce committee, where you're finding that two companies are coming together and there's going to be a merger. You're in the committee meeting. You're hearing it. You can immediately go to your office and say, buy stock in this company. They're going to merge. That's completely legal in Congress. And most of the people, if you wanted to know how they go into Congress with such a low salary and become multimillionaires worth $50, $60, $70 million like Nancy Pelosi, it's because they're not held to the same standard for insider trading. If you did the same identical thing they did, you'd end up in prison for insider trading. That's how corrupt our political system is. That's how insulated these people are from the judgments that they make. So let's look at the numbers. If we took out all of the malpractice, if we took out all the excess profiteering off drugs, if we taught alternative medicine, if we taught prevention to prevent these diseases, if we got rid of all the commercial insurance except for the Medicare for all, you want your private insurance, that's between you and the insurer and the physicians you want to see. But this way, everybody could get health care. You would save $1.7 trillion a year. $1.7 trillion per year. So therefore, we'd be back almost 30 years of what we'd be paying in an annual and basis. And then you just tag on that small surcharge on people's deducted as part of their salary as you deduct other taxes, and that goes into that fund, the fund that will pay for all medical education so a doctor doesn't get greedy. They're given a fixed, really nice guaranteed income, let's say $200,000 a year, so then they're not trying to overbill you. They're not trying to do procedures because they can profit from it. No oncologist could sell chemotherapy to you as they can today. They can buy a chemotherapy drug for $5,000, sell it to you for $12,000, and they just made $7,000 net profit. And they got 200 patients. That's how they make over $1 million to $2 million extra income a year. All that would be eliminated because you would streamline. You get rid of one-third of all those expenses by getting rid of all those companies that can pay the CEOs of insurance companies $15 to $20 million a year salary. That's how they can afford it. So you see, we can do Medicare for those who want it, for all, except those who want their private, and we can save money doing it and be healthier, prevent disease, and take the stress out of being a physician. So that from the day they graduate from medical school, which has been paid for by we the people, now they work for us. You want that? You're not going to have stress. Internship and residency, you're going to be paid your $200,000. Nurses the same way. That's the only way to correct the system. Everything else, they want to leave. The Democrats want to leave the profit in the system. And it will never work if you're going to do that. Because then it's just, you're supporting a private partnership with the government. And the private partnership always benefits the private corporations, the military industrial contractors who want war and conflict because they profit when there's conflict. Take out that excessive profit and see what would happen to medicine. Make manufacturers responsible for any damage they cause with their vaccines. Take away that exemption law. Revoke it. And we'll give you the ammunition of why it was a fraud from beginning till now. And you'll have that tomorrow. Thank you all for watching. Have a nice day.